us a room with a view of the beautiful Rhine. Give us a room with a view of the beautiful Rhine. Give me a muddy old creek in Texas or any old time. I got those up, two, three, four occupation GI blues. From my GI hat to the heels of my GI shoes. And if I don't go stateside soon, I'm gonna blow my fuse. We'll get hoss and pepper and black pump a nickel for chow. We get hoss and pepper and black pump a nickel for chow. I blow my next month's pay for a slice of a Texas cow. We'd like to be heroes, but all that we do here is mar. We'd like to be heroes, but all that we do here is march. And they don't give the purple heart for a falling arch. I got pulled up to for a occupation GI blues. From my GI hat to the heels of my GI shoes. And if I don't go stateside soon, I'm gonna pull my fuse. The fall lines are pretty as flowers, but we can't make them pass. The fall lines are pretty as flowers, but we can't make a pass. Cause they're always sad, saying keep it to you all the grass. I got the up, two, three, four occupation GI blues. From my GI hat to the heels of my GI shoes. And if I don't go stateside soon, I'm gonna blow my fuse. Occupation GI blue. Occupation GI blue. Ready.
Good evening, everyone. Tuesday, September 3rd, 2024. This is the Fakeologist / Lynn Hertel Show, where we talk about media fakery and everything in between that and the COVID hoax. And we've got Lynn Hertel, and she's back. She's doing shows all over the place. Lynn, welcome back. How was your...
Good to be here.
All right. I see you were making the rounds again with that Fake Nukes Phil guy. You're doing his show. I never thought I'd hear a Jewish woman on a Fake Nukes Phil Sunday table, round table with Fake Hitler.
Well, you know, those guys are all right. I mean, you know, look, I'm looking for allies.
Yeah.
I have no problem with the Christian identity people. I disagree with them, obviously. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't define reality in terms of race or genetics. But my feeling is, you know, there's a place for everybody in fakeology because we're after the truth.
Yeah.
Historical truth, irrespective of what our particular ideological or religious or political beliefs happen to be. We want the truth. And that's my standard. And the more painful and the more difficult it is to accept, the better it is, I think. That's the truth that you need to confront. So, you know, with respect to Elvis, I saw that movie, G.I. Blues.
Okay. What year was that?
It probably would have been like about 1960, 61, maybe.
Wow.
We used to be able to go to the movies on a Saturday and see a double feature, or actually all day full of movies. They drop us off at the movie for like 30 cents. It was ridiculous. And typically, if it was a double feature, there might be an Elvis film to pair together with Abbott and Costello or Laurel and Hardy or a Jerry Lewis comedy. Or there were horror films. We see all the horror films. The thing about Elvis is, he was as big as he was bigger than the Beatles. He was huge.
Yeah.
And here, I was pretty little, but I remember watching Blue Hawaii, G.I. Blues, Jailhouse Rock. and just to fix the chronology in people's minds so they understand it, that Elvis sold the polio vax and the military draft because Elvis was there to sell all the big narratives. And then he topped off that career by selling himself in the 60s, in the late 60s, in 1969, 1970. I guess it was 70 or 71, to President Richard Nixon. And that's what ultimately discredited him in our eyes. Because my generation, the people who became hippie freaks, you know, we were into the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, Procol Harum, Traffic, Cream, Jimi Hendrix, The Doors, The Grateful Dead, The Jefferson Airplane. However, we initially had an open mind to Elvis because Elvis started off as a rebel, right?
Yeah.
Late 1956.
Elvis the Pelvis.
Yeah, right. He was on the precipice of global stardom in 1956.
Okay.
Because Heartbreak Hotel had just reached number one on the charts earlier that year. And then he released Love Me Tender, which is a film about the Civil War, actually, interestingly enough. And that was his debut film with the theme song, Love Me Tender, released in November of 56. And at that point, Elvis made it onto the Ed Sullivan Show. Now, this was a big deal. I mean.
By the way, I love the lyrics of this. They gave us a room with a view of the beautiful Rhine. They gave us a room with a view of the beautiful Rhine. Give me a muddy old creek in Texas any old time. Wow.
Well, Occupation GI Blues. We were occupying Germany.
Yeah.
I guess we still do.
Who are the wordsmiths, Sid Tepper and Roy Bennett? Do we know these people?
No. Probably talented songwriters.
Okay.
You know, who helped launch Elvis's career. I mean, you know, he had a lot of – he had the Jordanaires singing backup for him. And
Sid and Roy passed away mere months apart in 2015. Do you think they are Jewish boys?
Siegfried and Roy?
No, Sid and Roy. Sid Tepper and Roy C. Bennett.
Oh, Sid and Roy. Oh.
Yeah, it does sound like Siegfried and Roy. You think they were Jewish guys?
I don't know.
Born and bred in Brooklyn.
But anyway, the thing about Elvis was, and this was always the case, right? When you appeared on Ed Sullivan, actually, there's a... when Elvis got drafted... Well, let me get through Ed Sullivan first. Because this is a big deal to show up on Ed Sullivan. And they would not show Elvis from below the waist.
Right.
Right. So, and, you know, I remember when the Beatles first appeared on Elvis. And when The Doors, Jim Morrison appeared on Elvis. We all tuned in on Ed Sullivan. Sunday night, you would tune in to Ed Sullivan if one of your big stars was going to be on. So he went on Ed Sullivan. And, but he wasn't only there to perform his hits. Before the show started, before the Ed Sullivan Show started, let me give you an idea of how big this was. In the early 60s, a Broadway musical was made called Bye Bye Birdie.
Right.
And then it was made into a movie starring Dick Van Dyke and Anne Margaret. Anne Margaret playing a 16-year-old high school girl, right? You know, but at that age,
his name was Israel Brodsky was Roy Bennett's name. So there you go.
There you go. Okay. Well, that's good.
Okay. Sorry.
And there's a song, and Bye Bye Birdie was a satire about the Elvis being drafted into the army. Because it's a comedy, musical comedy, and the theme is that this rock star, Conrad Birdie, is being inducted into the U.S. Army. And these hordes and hordes of teenage girls who worship him are all freaked out about it. And so they decide to do a promotional tour, his last promotional tour before he goes into the Army. And they come to this small town. And it's all about how it tears the small town apart because all the girls, I think the guy who played Anne Margaret's boyfriend was Bobby Rydell. I don't know if you remember him, but.
No, this is before my time.
Right. These are very popular You don't remember Bobby Rydell? How about Dion and the Belmonts? How about Paul Anka?
Yeah, Paul Anka, Canadian.
Okay, Bobby Darin, right? Bobby Vinton. But anyway, and there's actually a song in the musical Bye Bye Birdie called Ed Sullivan. It's probably the best song in the whole musical because it's really funny. It's about, oh, we're going to be on Ed Sullivan. It's like, you know, the spiritual journey to be on Ed Sullivan. So for Elvis to be on there was a big deal. And then, like I say, who the hell has a Broadway musical that becomes a hit movie made about him getting drafted in the Army? Bye Bye Birdie made all about Elvis. But anyway, before Elvis went on that Ed Sullivan show, before the show started, in front of the press and in front of Ed Sullivan himself, Presley flashed his smile that would always make all the girls scream and swoon, rolled up his sleeves, and let a New York State official stick a needle loaded up with a polio vaccine into his arm. And Scientific American has a whole article on it here that I've listed the link to. And you can see the pictures of Elvis getting the shot.
Oh, hold on a sec. Let me just bring up your screen here. I was looking at Sid Tepper. Okay, here we go. So you're saying Elvis was instrumental in coercing a generation to get the shot?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll get into a discussion of polio once we get done with Elvis, because from there...
Polio's on a comeback.
Well, they also used Elvis to sell the military draft.
Yeah.
And when he went in there, that's when he hooked up with a daughter of a colonel, might have been the commander of the base he was at, named Priscilla. And she was, I think, 14 at the time.
Yeah, little underage.
Well, what's strange is that here, Jerry Lee Lewis had married his cousin, who I think was 14 at the time. And it exploded into a huge scandal. And his concerts were being canceled and people were booing him off the stage. But for some reason, Elvis never took a hit on this. They managed his relationship with Priscilla in such a way that nobody ever questioned it, which is very strange to me. Of course, with GI Blues, Elvis was selling the military, wasn't he? He was selling the military draft. I know a lot of you out there don't understand that there was once, I know, by law, you have to, men, young men, have to register for the draft when they hit 18, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily going to be drafted. But we did have a military draft during the Korean War.
Yeah.
Right. In 1952, Eisenhower was elected.
Yeah.
And he, on the promise that he would go to Korea and negotiate a settlement there and get us out of that war, which we were drafting young men to fight and die in. And he did. Eisenhower went over there and negotiated an armistice with the North Koreans, the Chinese, and the Russians, and basically settled the Korean conflict for the moment. And that would have been, and so I remember that. And then I remember the election of 1956. That's the first election I remember. And Eisenhower won again. And like I say, that was the year 56 that Elvis appeared on Ed Sullivan. That was when his career was really taking off. Sold the shot, and then subsequently he sold the military draft to people. And everyone always said, in retrospect, and I have to reference, there's several biographies of Elvis. The one I think of the most is Albert Goldman's, which some said was a bit of a hatchet job, because it describes the fact that Elvis completely changed when he got, before and after he was drafted into the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Before Elvis went into the military, he was sort of a rebellious. He was kind of rebellious. And he was questioning things. And he was doing things experimentally. He was exploring new ideas. And he was kind of radical in a way. I don't want to say politically radical, but the line was that it was really the military that changed Elvis and made him completely conformist and basically integrated him into the system. Whereas earlier he had kind of been considered a little bit, you know, rock and roll was considered a little bit subversive. It was denounced as the devil's music. And Elvis swinging and swaying on stage and making suggestive eye movements and so forth. This was considered rather provocative for the time. And also the way his fans, young female fans, just swooned over Elvis, that was considered subversive. But like I say, when he got out of the military, he was super, super straight, super, super stand-up patriot all-American. And he never changed that. Now, in 1970, at the very height of mass protests against the Vietnam War, Elvis toured the Nixon White House with a loaded firearm. And I should say, just before that, in interviews and remarks he made, he had some pretty nasty things to say about John Lennon and the Beatles, whom he had met once. My view is that Elvis was jealous of the popularity of John Lennon and the Beatles, who were really riding high at the time in 1970. And John and Yoko were doing these sort of transcontinental overnight flights to protest the Vietnam War. Or actually, they did stunts where they would, I don't know, like sleep together in public or something.
Yeah, Canada, yeah.
Something like that, you know, to protest the Vietnam War. But at any rate, and then, of course, the Rolling Stones, they were bad boys. They had come out with their Satanic Majesty's Request, The Beggar's Banquet, I think one of their best albums, and Let It Bleed in 1970. And so Elvis was busy denouncing the hippies and the freaks and the Beatles. And to make it complete, he showed up at the White House with, as I say, a loaded firearm. I think he gave it as a gift to Nixon. And Nixon gave him, I have a picture of it here, I don't know if it was called the DEA yet. You know, they renamed the Bureau of Narcotics to Drug Enforcement Administration. That may have been under Nixon. He launched the first major war against drugs to bust pot smokers.
Right, war on drugs, yeah.
And this is how Elvis, a prayer is Elvis with a Priscilla. You could see that very young. Very, very young she was.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
But, here he was, and there he is in the military. See, they showed him. Oh, I mean, Elvis, it was obviously a big deal to draft Elvis, and they did it quite deliberately. You know, when they tried to draft Muhammad Ali,
he said no.
Career, and because he was an opponent of the Vietnam War. And they would do that. They would target young men who were prominent celebrities and maybe outspoken against the Vietnam War, they draft them. But in this case, I think it was a lot easier to do in the early 1960s than by 1970. So there's Elvis shaking hands with Nixon, very, very public. And Nixon gave Elvis a badge, awarded Elvis, made him officially a federal agent, see, because Elvis was going to report.
Hey, what do you think of the idea that Elvis was an FDM? I'm getting that from Wormy and Kate Emma. Anything?
Why would that be the case? What would lead you to believe that? Now, they do say he had a twin who died in infancy. But is there evidence for that? Do we have birth records for that? For the Elvis?
No, there's no real. Not that
well,
I.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that also is made up?
I have no idea, honestly.
Right, well, the FTM stuff is, that's off the wall. You got to come up with something strong to prove that.
Yeah, okay.
But having had an identical twin, no one would make a claim unless there was a birth record of that. So if someone's running, I assume that someone wouldn't be making that claim unless they confirmed it. Why would anybody make up the fact that he had an identical twin?
Yeah, well, if Elvis was an intel operation, maybe there was as a backup. I don't know.
Elvis was a truck driver from Tupelo, Mississippi. He had talent.
Yeah, that's the official story. It's possible. Yeah, I guess
right.
So.
I mean,
I want to believe in the Elvis story. I'm a big fan.
Right.
By the way,
they do is they wait until these talented individuals turn out to be popular. Right. Because what if they're not popular? What if people reject them? You know, there are singers. We were talking about Badfinger last week, I guess, or the week before.
A few weeks ago. Right. Yeah, that was
quite
a good
few weeks ago. They never made it success for whatever reason. So I say they simply pick and choose when they see something that has the potential for success or that it's achieving success, especially if it's in any way rebellious or subversive, then they have to bring it under control. And that's what they did with Elvis.
Yeah.
So he got his DEA badge from Richard Nixon. And when Elvis did this, we never forgot. The people I was with, we never forgave him for that. It was a sellout. It was as bad a sellout as Neil Young jumping on the COVID bandwagon.
Oh, it was way worse. Elvis is way more popular than Neil Young, so.
Well, okay, right. But, right, exactly. Or there are better examples I could think of. But this is why we turned against Elvis. And then he became, like I say, he became really obese, and he ended up in Vegas. And, you know, we hippies, we didn't have too much to do with Vegas.
Right.
But here we were in 1970 at the very height of mass protests against the Vietnam War, right? 500,000 people, 300,000, coming to Washington for the October moratorium in 1970. That's when he decided that he was going to back Richard Nixon.
Hold on. We got a caller in her.
Hold time, 40 seconds.
Hello, caller in her. Where are you calling from and what's your name?
Hey, Fakeologist, this is Jay from Texas.
Jay from Texas is becoming a regular caller in, or Jay?
It's a very interesting topic that y'all talk about.
Oh, good. I'm glad you found us. Lynn Ertel is an encyclopedia herself. A living encyclopedia.
Lynn, yes, very, very smart. Like, I was impressed. I was surprised about, because I didn't know that shooting for the Trump thing, that also is what they did, the site for the Night of the Living Dead, which also, like, ties into, like, a lot of stuff. Like, that's just a wild.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Because, I remember, wow, what a film. And that was a groundbreaking, terrifying film. In black and white, no less. The original George Romero, Night of the Living Dead. And I got to tell you, when we saw that at the drive-in movie theater, okay, I got to be honest about this now. We went out, we used to sneak into the drive-in movie theater. Two people would drive in and like three of us would climb into the trunk. We'd get in for free. But this particular night, we went to see Night of the Living Dead, the original George Romero Night of the Living Dead, 1968, 69. Maybe it was 68. And we dropped acid first.
Oh, boy, Lynn, wow. Revelations.
Big mistake.
Awesome.
Because I'm telling you.
Awesome.
That film freaked me out so, especially the scene where that little girl dies and then comes back as a flesh eater and kills her own mother. I mean, it was really, really a rough movie. And I got to say, I was so freaked out by that movie that I think for about a month afterwards, I slept with the lights on. Really. I mean, that movie really freaked me out. And so, but
yeah,
we know the way the movie is done, it's almost like a real life live newscast from rural Pennsylvania. And they were going through these towns in rural Pennsylvania, like Butler and Bellefonte. And so when I saw Trump appearing in Butler, Pennsylvania, I said, well, that's where George Romero filmed Night of the Living Dead. And I went and looked it up, and sure enough, it's a favorite location for filming horror movies because it's very rural and there are a lot of old houses around. It's just a good, cheap location. And you've got the locals there who are willing to be extras in any such movie. So,
I
picked up on that right away.
makes sense because, like, you're right. Like, the scenario behind that movie is a terrifying scenario. Because I saw the second one when I was, like, in elementary, and that scared me. Just the scenario of just the Walking Dead and people, like, you can't really get rid of it because anybody who dies comes back. It is. And then the whole story behind how he kept the film hidden, like the person who because George Romero sold it, and the person didn't want to get the second one out because of some copyright thing. And it's just, you're right, how they made the movie, it felt like you were watching a news story that could be out there, like they were trying to, like a predictive programming in a way, you know, before, I guess, before,
right? And
it
that's
was
why.
Out, right?
And by the way, that was very original. When you were watching Night of the first of all, Night of the Living Dead is essentially a zombie movie, but it's a very upscale zombie movie. I mean, it's about as advanced as you can get for a zombie movie. But you're right. Oh, yeah. The way they stage it with it, they show you these live news broadcasts, very realistic. That hadn't really been done much in the movies. Now, along comes the Blair Witch Project. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Which
was
I thought
was like
mediocre.
Handheld video.
Yeah, I thought, as soon as I saw the trailers, the commercials for the Blair Witch Project, which played in movie theaters, I think, might have made it to the theaters. I said, oh, this is exactly what they did in the original. It was a ripoff. Because once again, they've got these kids going through the woods with amateur cameras, and they try and make it look like it's. You know what I mean? They give it an air of realism. But I didn't think there was anything original about that. I thought, well, this has already been done in a sense. That kind of make it look like it's a real news story, you know?
Yeah, so, sorry, go on.
No, well, all I'm saying is, to anyone who saw the original Night of the Living Dead, the Blair Witch Project looks like it was kind of inspired by that to some extent, this idea of the handheld camera and make the camera shake a little bit so it looks real and, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean.
And the same concept behind, like, the whole, like, out of the world, like, out of body and whole, it goes on that same spirit type of path.
Right.
It's a very interesting, very.
Now you're not that old. How old are you?
I was born in 88, so I'm like 35.
Wow. Yeah,
you're young. Yeah. Puppy.
You're half my age.
Yeah, like, well, I talked to a lot of people when I was growing up in the 90s, and they would tell me all this interesting stuff, but like now,
I have not seen the remake of Night of the Living Dead, because should I see it? I mean, is it worth watching? Because the original was so shocking and so, you know what I mean? It was, there was nothing, there hadn't never been anything like it.
That's what I mean. The second one, you mean?
Well, I guess it would be the second one, yeah.
Well, yeah, well, I think that, because you described the first one as like out in the country, and I think it's a continuation of what happens in the city, because when the second one starts off, they're already in a panic.
Okay, so that's a sequel.
Yeah, looks like that's why the scenario seems like it, like you, how you were saying, it was like the movies, even though they're very far apart, it's in the same type of scene, in the same type of like news type of footage, you know?
This raises a more general question of what is the significance of zombie films in American culture, and some people attach a lot of importance to them and think that they basically predictive programming, or
so probably with like some type of maybe like rabies virus or something like that. That's why I was going to ask you, because I was thinking about, you know how they're talking about nukes and the nuking of cities and everything and stuff like that. Do you know about the World War One battle at Messines Ridge? Do you know about the giant crater that the British used to blow up a German? Like, it was just a huge crater that the explosion was heard in London. And I wonder if you take modern explosive technology, and if that same explosion was in the middle of a city, that's probably how. Because, like, I don't know.
This is World War One you're talking about, right?
Yes, yeah. So it was a World War One battle in France called the Battle of Messines Ridge, and the British dug these tunnels into the German under the German front line, and they packed like huge chambers with dynamite and explosives, and they just blew it up, and the whole hill was just blown up.
I doubt that the noise was heard in London. That doesn't seem likely.
that's just what the narrative is. But what I'm saying is, like, if that explosion was put on a map on a major city, how much would that be? Almost like the significance.
Oh, you could convince people it was a nuke, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And it's just, and that came to my mind one time when I was just watching all that and then seeing, like, well, how could certain things play out and everything? And
well, they also pioneered the use of poison gas in World War One. That was the first time that poison gas was used, mustard gas and some other things. They may have used sarin there first. I think the Germans started it because their offense, they got bogged down trying to conduct an offensive. And when they had no choice, finally, they used poison gas. And then the British turned around and used it. Now, maybe Dave J is going to tell us that that's all fake. That the injuries, the blindness, and the deaths that occurred from exposure to poison gas are all fake. Now, I think they really used poison gas in World War One, and also high explosives and devastating artillery strikes. So I think that part was real. But this idea that, in terms of predictive programming, that we get out of Night of the Living Dead is that this particular virus, which had arrived from a returning exploratory spaceship or space capsule that had been sent up, right? And as the story advances, we find out that this is some alien virus that's infecting people and spreading like crazy, right?
They're all like, what's wrong? What's the problem?
So the idea of zombies is very much linked to the idea a viral infection, isn't it? Right.
It's in the way they have it in the news, in the way they have even the film as a news thing would prepare somebody to be like, oh yeah, that's probably, it's like, I guess how do you say they work when they put stuff on? It just desensitizes you, right?
Right, or it gets you used to the idea. Of course, yeah, and really now, what they want is a world where everybody runs around, puts on a mask at the first sign of any alarm. They really want people to be sort of running around in a state of permanent fear of being infected. And of course, now it's been transposed to Gaza because, yeah, sure, Elvis sold the polio vaccine, and now the polio vaccine is being used.
It's in Gaza.
In Gaza.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that there's essentially an effective halt to the fighting in Gaza, so we're told.
Right, a ceasefire. So here we go, quiet weapons for silent weapons for quiet wars or something. So here they go.
Yeah.
If there really is anyone in Gaza, now they're really going to get to them, get to the children with this BS vaccine.
So polio vaccination, right? And the polio shot was among the very first to become a standard requirement for all public school children in the 1950s. After Elvis got it on TV in 1956, it became universal. We all had to get it. And at first it was the Jonas Salk vaccine shot. And then later they introduced an oral vaccine.
Sugar cube.
Called the Sabin vaccine. I don't find that quite as objectionable. And then every summer you had boosters. And of course, we always got tetanus shots. Or now it's called the DTaP.
Yeah.
Which really caused a day or two of pain and stiffness in the arm. And if you were going off to summer camp or camping, there were shots for typhoid diphtheria routinely required. And no one thought anything about getting these shots. But polio people were terrified of. Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
How often would people get sick? Like, how often would people get sick?
Well, that you can remember. This is kind of hard to pin down because FDR had been the sacramental poster child for polio victims. I mean, he was the president, elected in 1932. And supposedly people were convinced he had caught polio while swimming. And it was said that people avoided public swimming pools because polio spread there in the summers. So think about that. Here's FDR, who was president beginning in 1932. He was already famous by that time. He'd been Secretary of the Navy. And here I was getting vaccinated in the 1950s after FDR was dead. But to my parents, the image in the front of their minds was always, oh, FDR crippled by polio, in a wheelchair because of polio, see?
Yeah, he was constantly advertising that by being in the wheelchair.
Yeah, although they claimed that the media would try to show him from the neck up as often as possible. Everybody knew he was in a wheelchair and he'd been crippled by polio. Now, my parents had one lifelong friend who had been crippled by polio. I remember her very well. And she got around on a crutch. But for everyone, the polio shot was viewed as a sacred life-saving miracle, that it really prevented polio. And we were told that the polio vaccine had eradicated polio, just like the smallpox vaccine had allegedly eradicated smallpox.
Right.
Well, if that's the case, how is it that polio is showing up again? How can a disease that's been eradicated be showing up again? Well, you know what they're going to say.
Well, how can a virus, the virus,
they're going to say, oh, people weren't getting their vaccines.
Yeah, they can always blame the impossible to prove.
Right. Let me play this video here. I like this guy, Anomaly. Let's see if
I could read three headlines without getting censored. Large-scale polio vaccinations begin in war-ravaged Gaza after first case in 25 years. September 1st, 2024. UN says new polio outbreak in Sudan caused by oral vaccine. September 2nd, 2020. More polio cases now caused by vaccine than by wild virus. November 25th, 2019. And just a quick disclaimer, Associated Press made those headlines, not me, so if social media sites, for whatever reason, want to cover up that information, talk to AP. It doesn't get more mainstream than that. I'm simply showcasing what they're publishing.
So now we have the Associated Press.
By the way, just to make clear, I believe it's all chemical poisoning. Just like anything else, it's always the poisoning that they say prevents the disease, that is what causes the disease.
So, but of course, the theory behind vaccination is the hair of the dog that bit you. People who are used to curing hangovers, right? The idea of the hair of the dog that bit you is that you wake up in the morning with a hangover and so you drink a little alcohol and you'll feel better. But that's the idea behind vaccines. The original idea was they claim that they isolate the virus, which of course is a fraud.
Yeah, that's a fraud.
That's a lie.
Yeah.
And then they claim they culture an attenuated or a dead form of the virus.
Right, that's right.
And inject it into you so your body can recognize
yes,
it.
Yes, that is the official story. You're right.
Right. So they're teaching your body to create antibodies that will allegedly attack the virus.
Right. When the real virus comes to get you, the body will be ready.
Yeah, that's the theory.
That is the BS line. That's total horse crap.
But now the Associated Press is admitting that the vaccine itself is causing polio. Is that what I'm getting out of that?
I don't know. I don't know what they claim. I don't know. It's just to create more confusion.
Like I was just thinking, like, a good way to probably fight against the whole vaccine, it being not safe, is how did they do it when doctors were saying cigarettes were okay? Like, how would you be treated if you told the doctor, well, actually, it's actually kind of bad because
the science changes. That's how that works. The science keeps changing. They have to keep up with the times.
So how would we extrapolate that to the vaccines? How could we do that? The same thing that they did with cigarettes. Like, how could we make, like, you know what I mean? Like, because if you, like Lynn, like, I don't know if, could you remember or, like.
I don't understand the question. Do you, Lynn?
Like, if you went to the doctor and said, you know what, I don't think cigarettes are good. I actually think they're harmful at a time where they were saying that they were good.
Oh, yeah. Doctors used to make commercials. They used to be ad. Well, not, I don't know if I ever saw a television commercial, but certainly magazine ads. More doctors prefer Newport, which is a menthol. More doctors prefer Lucky Strike. I remember Lucky Strike advertising.
Yeah, so if you were somebody who said, you know what, I don't think that's right, how would you be?
Well, you just don't have to take it. You don't have to convince these doctors. They're just pharmakia. I don't see who cares what the doctor says.
How did the average person, like, if you were trying to tell them, like, don't smoke cigarettes, it's actually not good. And but if they, like with the vaccines, they say, oh, well, the doctor says, like, how would during that time?
The average person is lost. I don't even know why you're worried about it. The average person can't be convinced. So the propaganda works. And why would you even waste your time? And I'm not going to try and convince anyone.
It's about white coat authority.
Exactly.
People trust. They trust their doctor.
They trust their white coat.
Right. So.
So when did all that stop then? When did all that, like, for cigarettes, when did all that really, like, start, like, tapering off?
That stopped in about the 80s when they started, states started suing the tobacco companies for all injuries and health-related problems from cigarettes.
I think honest doctors.
Back when you
were
born.
A lot of doctors smoked, probably most doctors smoke cigarettes too.
And most of the doctors are unhealthy physically.
Yeah, let me tell you, I watch a lot of movies. A lot of movies. Westerns, gangster films, spy films, war films. And I'm going to tell you, the most constant thing I see in any movie, especially from the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, right on into the 60s, is cigarette smoking. They're always smoking in movies. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Is it essential to the narrative? Is it essential to the script? Very rarely, almost never do they have to be smoking. It's product placement. They are promoting cigarette smoking. They're glamorizing it. Everybody remembers that famous scene from, it might have been Now Voyager, one of these romances from the 1940s with Betty Davis and Paul Henreid, where, I don't know, he puts two cigarettes in his mouth and he lights up both of them and gives one to her. It was supposed to be so romantic. So, yeah, all you see is people smoking cigarettes in the movies. And I'm going to ask Dawn Abirather to answer this question.
Yeah.
What do you think the second most frequent thing you see in movies is after smoking cigarettes in terms of consumption?
Alcohol?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can't count how many times I've been watching a movie and they're always pouring a drink and then pouring a second drink.
Yeah, even on the TV shows, J.R. Ewan, he's always drinking.
Every possible opportunity to introduce cigarette smoking and alcohol consumption is in movies to the point where you kind of start to notice it. I've always noticed it.
Yeah.
And that's what this is about. They normalized this behavior. Then they glamorized it and romanticized it. And so it became, and hey, everybody smokes cigarettes. You know, gosh, my father, he smoked cigarettes his whole life.
T. Latte says, I'm watching the old Columbo shows and they smoke cigarettes a lot. Yeah, I used to love Columbo. I watched all that.
The only exception is every now and then you'll see him light up a cigar.
Well, yeah, he did the cigar. He did the cigar. That's correct.
Right.
That is correct.
So that's how, you know, a doctor. Now, we got to be fair about this.
Yeah.
The doctors knew that cigarette smoking was linked with things like hypertension and emphysema respiratory difficulties, heart disease. They knew that. And many of them advised their patients not to smoke.
Yeah.
But the American Medical Association, they were bought and paid for. And so doctors were not going to go out of their way to start a campaign against smoking. And in fact, it was not the medical profession that ultimately turned against smoking. It was social reformers, right?
Yeah.
Liberal social reformers.
So the American medical profession, that's the one who does the tests on everything, right?
No, I don't know if they do any tests.
That's, I don't think they do.
But like, that's
the doctor's union. That controls the narrative.
Right. Like if you wanted to get the studies for smoking or vaccines, who would be the one to do
the
them?
The industry itself.
It's self-regulating.
Right. The reason why the industry was able to be sued is because investigators discovered that they had been concealing experimental results of their own. The industry itself in their labs had discovered that this stuff was causing tumors in mice, had discovered that it was harmful. They knew it, but they concealed it. So, you know, it's just like the Sacklers marketing. Originally, they marketed OxyContin as non-addictive.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous, but.
You know, the vaccine companies have their own studies, right? But it's all just buried, right?
Well, under law, they're required to conduct these studies until Donald Trump came along with warp speed and said, you can drop the animal testing and rush the thing to market right away because it was a Pentagon project.
You know what was interesting about that whole warp speed Donald Trump thing? When he talked about we're going to have a vaccine in a year, the entire left media was all saying it wasn't going to be safe because you have to wait 5 years. The entire, not just left, but like anybody who was any of type of was like, yeah, you can't have it. It can't be safe. That's not
well,
possible.
Donald Trump was to bring in the vaccines for the right wing, and then they had to switch over to the left wing. Hey, I got to let you go now.
Okay.
You're doing a good job, but I want to keep going, brother. Thank you for calling. You're a good caller.
Thank you, my God. Thank you, Lynn.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you for everything. Thank
you. Are you up there? I will. Where are you living? You're not in Butler, Pennsylvania yourself, are you?
Oh, no. I'm down in Texas.
Ah, Texas. All right. Next time you call in, give us a report from down there, huh?
Okay. Yeah.
Are you anywhere near the border?
About like 150 miles, you know.
That's pretty close.
Pretty close.
That's very close.
It's this stuff here. Yeah, I mean,
Before you go, are there border checkpoints? I heard it's at the 100-mile mark, up to 100 miles.
Yeah. There's a border checkpoint not too, like, if you go down south, like about 50 miles.
So what happens when you go through it?
Oh, they just tell you, are you a legal U.S. citizen, and you just say yeah, and then you go past. They have them up there, though. People.
So they just ask you. They don't ask for proof.
No. If you look like you. That's the thing. It's so weird. Like not. They haven't asked for any ID for me. Anything.
So it's kind of just an intimidation factor. If they're not going to ID you, then what's the point?
Yeah, I think they're there so the people, because like big groups come in trucks, and then what they do is before they get there, they stop and everybody gets off and goes around.
Oh,
like they do a trek around it. It's crazy. Yeah, there's a lot of wild stuff.
Yeah, that sounds crazy. Yeah. Okay, man. Thanks for
thank
keep
you.
Tabs on that and report back to us because you know.
Yeah, we need a report from the border from.
Right, that's important to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll let you know. Our local news does stuff here, and they do reports.
But they might be exaggerating it as well, too. I mean, you know, that's what we want to try.
Well, no, the reports they do is like they stopped a local lawyer smuggling something like stuff like that. Like high prominent people are in the smuggling operation.
Oh, yeah, that's where the money is, smuggling, of course, yeah.
Big bucks, 40 grand a person or whatever, yeah. It's a lot.
But not just
humans.
It's
wild.
All right, let's get back to...
Well, thank you. Y'all have a good night, okay?
Take care.
Thank you, Jay. Very nice.
Here's the bottom line on COVID, because Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in May of 2023 said Pfizer and Moderna don't really own those vaccines. They slap their labels on them.
They're made for the military. Military countermeasures.
It was a Pentagon project.
DOD.
Right. So Catherine Watt.
I love her.
Right from the very beginning when she pointed out the military character of this.
And let's just call that's bailiwicknews.substack.com. Everyone needs to go check it out for sure.
Right. Now, this particular link that I saw was in Substack, Sage's newsletter, and it's got everything on this particular subject. There's Naomi Wolf. They start questioning just how authentic this Robert Malone is, because he worked for the Pentagon on this stuff.
Yeah, and Darkside Papers, shortfake.com/darkside. He really breaks it down, all these so-called opposition-controlled opposition.
Let's see if...
Between him and his two partners, Jeremy Farrar, who runs the Wellcome Trust, and Bill Gates... they control 61% of the biomedical research in the world, and those three men have used the same pattern of control, of the manipulation of fear, of the generation of fake pandemics. And I'm not saying this one is a fake pandemic, because it isn't. Throughout their careers, they've repeatedly...
Yeah, see, that's RFK Jr.'s assignment. Is to say, well, yeah, there are fake pandemics, but this one wasn't.
Yeah, not this one. This was a good one. Yeah,
right. So
he is definitely controlled opposition.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But if
even he has to admit that it was a military operation, then we can cut to the chase on that.
Yeah.
We don't have to, you know.
Take a look at my screen here, by the way. This is Darkside Papers, shortfake.com/darkside. He's got all these different people in here in his papers where he's broken them down. Miles Mathis, T. Keith Glennon, Del Bigtree, Dr. Malone, Dr. McCullough, Dr. Yeadon. He really takes a lot of these guys apart. So this is a really good collection of papers, and he has a Telegram channel. I haven't really hung out on Telegram in a while. I just get bored of it. But take a look at shortfake.com/darkside. You can download all his papers from this link here. It's a Google Doc, and there's tons of them here, as far as I can tell. Even DNA fingerprinting, a closer look.
This was the point I wanted to make when I posted a week or two ago that piece about New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah.
Who said we treat it like a war. Well, with no accident, he put it that way. It was always a militarized pandemic response planned and controlled by the Pentagon. So here, a CNN interview with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo the day before he issued the shutdown and stay at home directives. Right. It's a good example of how they ran this using wartime rhetoric. Wartime imagery and orders to implement a response that looked nothing like a disease outbreak, but planned and every bit like a bomb attack drill. So the thing was militarized from the very beginning.
Oh yeah, military operation. Yep. Yeah.
So that's something where when we're discussing this with people, we should cut to the chase on that. Oh, this was a Pentagon operation.
Yeah, and that's what Bailiwick News. She really gets to the point. So I'll put a link to that. This is more of a...
And it also suggests that probably what they would have liked to do, instead of saying it was caused by the Wuhan fish market or a lab leak, the lab leak rumor, that's in a way, almost a very subtle way of saying this was a bioweapons attack.
Yes. Well, yeah, it's also confirming that this is a... It's a virus that they developed. So it keeps that contagion concept going. By the way, do you follow Sasha Latipova?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
Bailiwick and Sasha seem to be somehow linked. They're always recommending each other. And then apparently something happened between Sasha and the Baileys. The Baileys were lashing out at Sasha. So I don't know. I don't know if this is conjured up or organic, this so-called spat. I don't know exactly what the Baileys did, but there's a whole thing that started up maybe a week ago or a couple days ago. So interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't keep track of the drama that always erupts.
Yeah, it's drama. You yeah. got it.
So, yeah, that's something that we have to emphasize to people, that this was a military operation. And that's why they had no respect for any constitutional rights. Right? I mean, that's why people gave up their freedom, because basically they ran the same psychology as a wartime situation.
Yeah. Hey, before we go, because it's about 55 minutes, you were appearing on a couple shows. Do you want to tell us about those shows? I think,
well,
where were you in the last week? What were you up to?
I guess I went on Gemma O'Doherty's show.
Yeah. And
with Phil to discuss some things, but that might have been last week. Oh, yeah. Went on Phil's Sunday group.
Okay, wait. Let's list these so all your fans can find it here. So you went on Gemma O'Doherty. Let me see if I can find that. She's on BitChute. So we'll put a link to that. Just so people know, Lynn is everywhere. If you don't know where Lynn is, we'll let you know. And if you want to email Lynn, lynn@fakeologist.com.
You know, with respect to Phil's Sunday group.
Wait, I want a link to this one here. Where is it here? Should be on this page somewhere.
We spent a lot of time discussing that yacht.
The alleged yacht
catastrophe. And all the indications that it may have been another case of corporate death faking because of the individuals involved, and especially the CEO of Morgan Stanley.
Oh, here it is. Was this it here where you were talking? Let's see.
On board and his wife.
Okay, there we go. So what did you conclude there?
Many, many indicators that this thing was staged.
Okay.
From the implausibility of the narrative to the video material that didn't make any sense to the startling coincidence of the fact that he had just managed to be acquitted of criminal fraud charges brought against, well, there was a long-term fraud case against this guy who owned Lynch, his name, Mike Lynch, sort of the Bill Gates of the UK, I would say. Anglo-Irish and British, half-Irish, half-British, Mike Lynch, a Bill Gates type character. And he'd been involved in 14 years of litigation with Hewlett-Packard, where they were accusing him of fraud. He created a company called Autonomy and oversold it, I guess. But they were charging him with fraud. He got acquitted. And it looks like he and his lawyers and a lot of the people who were involved in this case were all celebrating on board this yacht when it allegedly was sunk in a whirlpool. So highly implausible. No other vessels around were hit by this thing. So we don't even know it was real. I guess they call it a water tornado. Are there such things?
I think so. Something like that. Just a funnel, water funnel.
Right. But it wouldn't have taken down a yacht of this size. I mean, this is a huge thing. And just the idea that it all happened so quickly. It's too many details don't make any sense. And it's also very, very convenient that all these people are now out of the way. Especially, and I think this may be even more important than the alleged death of Mike Lynch, is the death of the CEO of Morgan Stanley. So we should be following what happens at Morgan Stanley over the next few months, because why would they have removed this guy from the scene unless there was some kind of business agenda going on? My contribution to the discussion, you know, Phil likes to focus on forensics.
Yeah.
And I focus on the coherence of the narrative and the money involved. You know, how will money change hands here? Who profits? What's the business objective that's accomplished by this very convenient death of so many people? Now, we do have some survivors from that boat accident, and I haven't really tracked what's happening to them. but I'm going to be looking at that. So, yeah, that's what we discussed on
the show. So then you went on the Sunday group, which is kind of brave of you, because let me read some of the comments. Lynn isn't shy, but do we have to always... But do we always have to become exaggerations of ourselves, a caricature, Lynn perhaps most, but not, I don't know what that means. I'm not understanding that comment.
Yeah, I might get a little intense. I think what happened was there was one of the participants, Walter, who was there on the bottom left. He's sort of an adherent of a biblical approach to this, and I guess I got triggered because he used the word Yahweh.
This guy. Oh, right. This guy.
Yeah,
oh.
Whenever they start getting into Yahweh, it's like, you know, Yahweh, yeah.
So Phil,
Jehovah,
Phil,
God.
Phil brought you on to mix it up with these guys, eh?
Well, it was good. It was cordial. It was all cordial. I mean, I understand. I'm for serious discussions of...
Let me hear.
There's so much more I could say about Jack Kennedy because I lived through all that.
We could do a whole 2 hours on Jack Kennedy.
Yeah, I remember the Bay of Pigs. And I remember his brother allegedly going after Jimmy Hoffa. That was another thing, too. How hypocritical. Here, they got elected.
There you go. So there's Lynn. So let me just read some more
comments.
Yeah,
what happened was Walter was saying that Jack Kennedy moving to... issue new currency without the Federal Reserve right before they shot him.
Oh, so I see. Right.
We had to take
that old trope.
Yeah, we had to take on the Camelot myth of JFK, and we spent a lot of time talking about that. So I it's very important to me, no matter what kind of ideological background someone has.
Yeah,
it's very important to me that they not be living with illusions.
Yeah,
and the Kennedys are a major illusion.
You divided their audience. It says here, Donking says, great show. Lynn is awesome. And then the next comment, DXR BitChute, Lynn is horrible. And then what else we got here? Can't listen when Lynn's on screaming for no reason. Typical female. Okay, wah. And then Sean says, she is very well informed. What name am I? I'm loving her. William Smith, I like her. So you got more fans than you have detractors over there. So good for you.
Yeah, I got a little bit excited because, you know, I don't know. I guess I was fired up as soon as somebody starts talking about how great Jack Kennedy was. You know, I went through that too. I mean, I believed in the Kennedy myth for years and years.
I think, yeah.
And so when I see somebody else, you know, trotting it out, I kind of lose it. I admit it.
Yeah, no, that's good. So I linked to that in the show notes. This is FAK 937, Lynn Ertel. Make sure you email Lynn@fakeologist.com. And she's everywhere. She's on the show every Tuesday. And
Someone posed a question in the chat about my being aggressively opinionated or outspoken.
That's what makes the show interesting.
Yeah. Let me tell you where that comes from, though.
Go ahead.
All through childhood, into adulthood, a recurring theme of my dreams and nightmares was something is happening. I'm being kidnapped. I'm being abducted. And from my own bed in my own house. And I can't speak out because when I try to speak, there's no voice. In other words, a recurring theme in my dreams is trying to speak and no sound comes out. Can you imagine? I mean,
when did that start? How old were you there?
Oh, I 4 or 5 years old. I remember experiencing
that. That's traumatic.
That.
Did somebody, something traumatic happen to you? Like that's how people.
I think it was just the fact that, yes. Yeah. There were things going on and.
Oh. Okay.
What I learned about grown-ups and adults was that they were incompetent bastards who never listened to you. Never listened to you. You try to tell them something. You could be falsely accused of something and try to explain to them, no, it wasn't me. They didn't want to hear that.
Okay.
And I experienced this in elementary school, and it really put the – I was very shy. I was very shy and not outspoken at all, but I had this recurring dream of trying to speak out and having no voice. I don't have that so much over the last 10 years. I haven't experienced that dream much at all anymore. But I think it relates to the fact that from an early age, I couldn't get a hearing. I could never get a hearing. And boy, there were so many stupid, asinine adults around me, so ignorant. I grew up with an absolute contempt for all authority. And that's what it comes from. That's what it comes from the stupid shit that I saw the grown-ups around me doing. And believe me, it was some stupid shit. And now you can understand why the 60s happened, why we were in rebellion, because we were sick of being lied to. All this had to do with the Vietnam War, one lie after another. I mean, you know, I don't know. You had to be there to experience it, to experience how authority figures lost all credibility. We called it the credibility gap, and then it became the generation gap. So, of course, I don't think it even comes close to the credibility gap that we're living through right now. Because now you've got huge segments of the population that don't believe anything.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was ever that. You know, we never quite distrusted the New York Times or the Washington Post as much as they're distrusted now. We never thought they'd be so outrageous as to fake death. That wouldn't have occurred to us. We thought the reports of the My Lai massacre from Vietnam were real. And we won't have time to get into this latest massacre narrative that's been trotted out by the New Yorker magazine.
Oh, well, why don't we finish on that? Because I know you put a post on fakeologistforums.com. Fakeologistforums.com. Why don't you bring that up real quick and we'll look at that and then we'll close her out.
Yeah. Let me see if I can get this.
Well, it looks like it's on the top there.
Okay. Well, what's happened is back during in 2005, 2006, rumors came from Iraq of massacres. We were told IEDs, improvised explosive devices were killing and maiming American troops. And in this particular case, a group of Marines were in the town of Haditha and allegedly massacred 24 unarmed civilians, men, women, and children, in their homes. And I may have a video here of, here we go. I want you to watch this. And now what's happened is this. What's happened is the New Yorker magazine has said, oh, under the Freedom of Information Act, we now have photos of this massacre that the Pentagon has been concealing since 2005. That's almost 20 years. And now we have these new photos. So right away, I wanted to get the photos to Phil. I had to look them over. And I printed links to them all so you all can look at them for yourself. But what I want you to watch, it's only 2.5 minutes, is this 60 Minutes interview with the sergeant, the Marine sergeant, who was not quite convicted. I think he got a slap on the wrist. He was not even nobody was dishonorably discharged for this alleged atrocity. I want you to watch this guy and tell me if you think he's telling the truth.
Okay.
He went on trial today at Camp Pendleton, California, in the killing of
24
unarmed civilians in Iraq.
Can you let me play it here? Let me play it because it's coming. Wait, the uploader. I can't even watch it in my country. Wow. How's that?
This is 60 Minutes. This is an episode of 60 Minutes.
I know. On my end, it says I can't even watch it. So there you go. Can you click on the YouTube link and share the YouTube screen so we can see it easier?
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that. Share.
Yeah, I can't watch that 60 Minutes clip. And it's the uploader. Who's the uploader? Is it 60 Minutes website or YouTube?
Well, for YouTube, I don't know. Who's the uploader for YouTube?
No. Whose channel is it on YouTube?
Oh, the channel is called CBS News.
Okay, so that's blocked. That video.
CBS News. Okay, I think I've got it here.
I can see it. Let's go.
Described as an atrocity by U.S. troops there. But the accused, Staff Sergeant Frank Wooderich, says the action he took that day was to protect his fellow Marines. Wooderich was leading a squad through a neighborhood in the hostile town of Haditha, a bomb exploded, killing one of Buttigieg's Marines, Lance Corporal Miguel Terrazas, and wounding two others. While searching for the bomber, the Marines killed five unarmed men who drove up in a car. Then they went house to house. In his only interview on 60 Minutes in 2007, Buttigieg told us the Marines rolled grenades into rooms when they heard rustling behind the doors. Did you step in the room?
I did glance in that room.
What did you see?
It was...
He's lying.
You know, bodies.
Okay, so you think this is a fake? So you think this is a fake event that he's?
Oh,
lying.
I don't know if it's fake event or not. I know this guy. This guy looks like a liar to me. I'm seeing indications of lying.
You know, initially.
What year is this interview from? Scott Pelley is just a.
You know,
interview.
I can't initially.
Yeah, I'm just. How old is this? Is this all the way back to the? Oh, 12 years ago.
12 okay. years ago.
Yeah, 12 years.
It's an old story. But why are they reviving it now?
May have been children in there.
Okay, so it's being revived now. Okay, I get you.
Get over this again. Just listen to him. Watch it.
You know, I can't initially. I remember there may have been women in there.
There may have been women in there.
May have been children in there.
May have been. Like he didn't know? He wouldn't remember?
So why are they outing this guy? What is this? Is this just to discredit the U.S. military? What do you think?
Well, look, why now? Why bring it out now? Well, in my link, I remind people of the New Yorker magazine's disgusting record with respect to Sandy Hook.
Right.
I mean, they're major, major purveyors of the Sandy Hook narrative. And I publish links to their coverage of Sandy Hook. So my criteria here is to say, well, if they would have lied that much,
yeah,
a massacre that never happened in Newtown, why wouldn't the New Yorker also be propagating these new photos that are now suddenly available? Why? Well, they're claiming that the reason why the photos are out now, you know, 20 years later, 20 years later, basically, is because the freedom of they finally forced the Pentagon to release them under the Freedom of Information Act.
Right.
Of course, I never buy that. I never buy that. The photos could have been destroyed. It's ridiculous. When you look at the photos, they don't really show you much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Phil looked at them and right away called them out as fake. They kind of reminded me of the pictures we saw from the Bataclan Theater massacre, where there were indications it had been set up, it had been staged. But that is an interesting question. Why now, after all this time, do they want to dredge this up again? Now, one of the top military advisors to Trump is this general, this Marine General Mattis, M-A-T-T-I-S, who they called Mad Dog Mattis. And Mattis is the one who basically ensure the fact that these soldiers who were accused of some pretty horrific atrocities of massacring unarmed men. I mean, look, they claim that an IED exploded and killed a Marine sergeant who was very popular. His name was Terraza. And immediately they stopped a taxi, pulled everybody out, and shot them. Is that how Marines behave? Then they went through the town door to door massacring people. Is that how Marines behave? So what are we looking at here? If this really happened, it's pretty horrific. And what's even worse is the fact that none of these guys did a day of prison time for this. They got a slap on the wrist and no dishonorable discharges from what I've read. It wasn't like Milai, where Callie, at least, was convicted by a courts martial. So now we want to know. It may be even worse if the U.S. military fabricated these photos. And Phil is saying he thinks they're fake. So either way, the Pentagon are a bunch of liars, and we can't believe anything they tell us.
Or 60 Minutes.
Or 60 Minutes right away.
Pathetic.
Last,
yeah, I saw CBS 60 Minutes. Well, of course, this is what they want us to see. Why? What's the agenda? Well, that's for you to explain to me what the agenda is. I have some ideas about it. I do think that they're out to discredit the military, but I don't think they need to work very hard at that, because it was the Pentagon that pulled off 9/11 as a PSYOP. It was the Pentagon that pulled off the COVID as a PSYOP.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't the Pentagon be also pulling this off as a PSYOP? Because that's all they do. That's their specialty, is lying to us and making shit up. So, yeah, people can go
business.
Out there, post it, all the links, can look it over, look at the pictures and decide for yourself if this new massacre narrative is real or it has any basis in reality.
All right. I'll put that at fakeologist.com. At FAK937, Lynn Ertel, a new massacre narrative from The New Yorker on the Fakeologist forums. All right, Lynn, thanks for joining. And you got any more shows this week with Phil or Gemma?
Not official. Well, I don't know. I'll probably be back on with Phil next Sunday, maybe.
Wow. So you got a standing invitation. You got four.
Well, you know, I got along with Bruce and the Scotsman there. Yeah, I got some questions for him about the UK, because we are getting horror stories out of the UK right now. And I want to hear from him that it's not exaggerated.
Yeah, exactly. Or, yeah, what is really happening there?
You know, we need reports. You know, we got listeners out there. You guys got to call in, write to us, post in the forums. How else do we know what's going on? Really?
Exactly. Write Lynn at fakeologist.com or Ima at fakeologist.com. Lynn, thanks so much for joining. Have a great night.
Take care.
Take care. All the best. There goes Lynn Ertel. Lynn at fakeologist.com. There goes me. fakeologist.com/donate if you like this show. Support independent media, fakeologist.com/donate. And we got some coffees in from a couple donors this week. And I know all donations are way down for all the shows. We got a new donation from Allison. Thank you so much, Allison. $3.11 a month on the monthly donor list. Thank you so much. On Patreon, actually. Well, thank you so much, Leah M. Mark T, thanks everyone for joining. We'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow is Wednesday, Fake Nukesville, and maybe Jim Rizzoli. We'll see what happens. Take care. Have a good night.